This segment of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Power Women Investing, Ronstadt Insurance, and Mayfield Florists.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure...
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
...the Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt, and I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful,
that
Jeffrey.
That is right, Fred.
And we invite you to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment off of iTunes. So, Jeffrey, we had a little bit of entertainment ourselves this weekend at the Tucson Festival of Books.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, still going on today.
Matter of fact, I'll be there in 30 minutes for my deal with Richard Russo. So the jig's up, Fred. We're taping the show this week.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
And right now, we happen to be taping the show during the Wildcat-Utah game. The Cats are up 22-8 with 6:52 left in the first half. So don't tell us how it ends.
Good. Thanks. So, you know, we love doing the Festival of Books. This is, what, the third year that we've been involved in, and we got to moderate some panels, some really cool panels.
Yeah, this is my second year. I'm not as cool as you, so I got my first shot at it last year.
No, this is my second year, too. I mean, but we've been helping out with the festival.
Yeah, love the
last three years.
Festival of Books.
And the one thing that we wanted to give a little shout-out for
Wahoo!
Is our Uncle Paul... works at the University of Arizona in facilities maintenance.
Well, let me tell you something about facilities maintenance.
Those guys owe me $20.
They may owe you $20, but they do a heck of a job.
Oh, yeah.
That school is well-groomed, well-maintained, and all because of those facility maintenance guys. So,
and it's especially noticeable when you're out at a football game, basketball game, stuff going on campus. But when you have 100,000 people... marching through the mall at the University of Arizona, and it's looking as good as it looks. You got to give a shout out to these guys.
Well, and they're kind of the unsung heroes because you only really call those guys when something goes bad. So if you don't have to call them, you know they're doing a great job. So
that's exactly
hats
right.
Off to you guys.
So thanks, Paul, for bringing that to our attention, and we love celebrating good work like that. Jeff,
even though Paul is no, just kidding. Yeah, Fred.
So, is your name on the OSIRIS-REx mission yet?
No, you know, I haven't put it on the OSIRIS-REx mission yet, though I will.
So, if you go to the Planetary Society on the website and get, you can get your name on the OSIRIS-REx rocket that's heading out to the asteroid Bennu.
Bennu, spell Bennu for me, Fred.
B-E-N-N-U.
Nice. Thought I'd get you on that one.
Bennu. Oh, you know, I forgot to ask you to use it in a sentence.
Bennu?
Yes.
Let me come up with one in a minute.
All right. And speaking of rockets, the Desert Heat launch is coming up March 29th, March 30th. The Southern Arizona Rocketry Association is doing their huge launch, two-day festival, which includes a night launch.
Can you define huge?
Your head?
Heed.
Pants, now.
Like Sputnik.
And let's see, what else are we going to get ourselves into, Jeffrey?
I got it.
Yeah?
How about the Hard Charge event?
Oh, we've been talking about this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and neither one of us have done anything about getting ready for this thing.
That's absolutely not true. Dude, I am carb loading on a daily basis.
Nice.
Well, that's not true. Now that it's Lent, no beer. So... Oh.
Yeah. So with us today is Brent Wolf, who is one of the folks putting together the Hard Charge event. And Brent, how are you doing?
I am doing great, and I appreciate you guys having us on.
Oh, yeah. We are so excited about this. Our friend, Brian Chumler, who has X Racewear, actually turned us on to you guys. And we're so excited. We got a team. Hopefully we still have a team.
We have a team.
Yeah, we have.
I guarantee you our team's going to do better than we are.
Probably.
Because I heard, and you've got to help us dispel some myths about your event. Is it true that at the end of every mile, there's like a big table with beer on it?
That is incorrect. So that is a myth.
It must have been like that pickleball or some mushball tournament I was thinking about. You know, you make it to first base, you drink a beer, go to second base, drink a beer.
Yeah, softball leagues that we hear rumors about. No, but at the end, every participant does get a free beverage. So there is if you're over 21, there's a nice cold beer waiting for you at the end.
Only one?
Well, you can have more. There's more available. That's
I'm just teasing you. Tell our listeners about your event. Can you give us more information on what we're going to be up against?
Yeah. You know, to educate someone that doesn't even know what hard charge is, it's an obstacle course race. And obstacle course racing is, you'll see them all over the nation, and it's varying lengths and varying degree of difficulties with obstacles or how many obstacles are on a course. Our course is a little over 4 miles and 20 to 30 obstacles. And you will see things. We have one called No Holds Barred. It's one of our favorite, where you're climbing across monkey bars, over truss, over 10 feet in the air, but then there's a 4-foot pit of water underneath you. If you
with crocodiles in it?
Yeah, crocodiles and sharks with laser beams, isn't that? Yeah.
Yes!
Nice!
Finally!
All right, you finally get the laser beam shark thing, Fred.
Yes, you got to watch out for them. But no, you'll be doing things like that. You'll be a little army crawling under, we call it backstretch or under wire with a muddy pit. We've got one called deep freeze where you're going into a ice cold bath. You have to dunk your head under our truss and get through the other side. Some that I don't tell you what's involved. We have one called black hole and one that's called storm in the desert. If you're a little claustrophobic, you might have trouble with. But the main thing is they're all fun, and it gets us out there, it gets us moving. And this sport, actually, obstacle course racing, is the fastest growing participant sport in the United States.
I find that amazing. You know, I didn't mean to step on you, but I find that kind of participation sport, I find that amazing that this is really the fastest growing in the country because, I mean, it's daunting. It can be very, very nerve-wracking as you're leading up to these things to think that you're going to get zapped by a taser or have to, like, go into a tunnel and maybe not find your way out. That's scary stuff.
Yeah, you know, they're a lot more intimidating. This goes across all of them. A lot more intimidating than they look. You know, part of the marketing out there with this industry is to scare you a little bit. But also, when you're done, you have that sense of accomplishment. We don't do electric shock. We don't do things that, you know, are like that. We put an obstacle in front of you, rope climbs, things like that, and we want you to complete them. That's the thing. We have a little joke, and I always say it, but it holds true to this day, is when we started it, you know, they're not impossible, they're obstacles. And so we want people to succeed. We want people to have that sense of accomplishment when they're done.
That's awesome.
And so we've done, you know, you guys were teasing each other about not training or carb loading. And what's really neat about our event is we're catered to both parts. We have the Charge for Glory, which is your elite athletes and your people that want to try to win this in the fastest time possible.
That'll be Fred. Then,
yeah, exactly.
That'll be Fred.
And and then we have the Charge for Fun as well. And the goal of that, it's not timed or anything. And the goal of that one is just to come out, get a team like you guys are getting, run together, walk together if you have to, everybody hang out until the last person gets through an obstacle, and then just finish. That's the goal of completing it.
All right.
And whether you missed an obstacle or two or you fell in the water pit or whatnot, maybe the next time you come out, you're able to get it and motivate yourself. But what we're seeing with the Charge for Fun is, you know, you mentioned kind of scary and daunting and intimidating. Is that people, there's a few that they'll see on our website and go, well, I'm not going to do that one. I'm going to skip that one. And they get out there, and they start running, start jogging, maybe walk a little, complete an obstacle. Pretty soon, you're energized, and your sense of accomplishment, and all of a sudden, you're trying that one that you didn't think you could do, and you're getting across.
That's awesome.
We see it, we run a staff run every the day before each of our events after we're done setting up. And we had a couple of people on our staff that didn't want to do the monkey bars and go over afraid of heights, and they didn't think they could get across. And so they hop up on the box, and we're encouraging them. And it took us a minute to convince them to go across, but then they went across, and they made it all the way. And then they're feeling so high that they're just ready to run after that and dash. And so when people get done, the sense of accomplishment is just great. People are ready to run it again, actually, when they finish, believe it or not.
Yeah, Jeff and I have actually done, three obstacle course races. Jeff has done one. And they're an absolute blast. And when you're done, it is, you are so high after that.
Yeah, you're right. It is. I mean, so you go from a sense of intrepidation to you go out there and you get it done, and you feel like there's nothing you can't accomplish. So we're looking forward to this, and we hope our teammates are looking forward to it as well.
Absolutely.
Because we're really soft selling this sucker. So they think they're going to come out and it's going to be a walk in the park. But we're looking for fun.
Get them out there. And then they'll never know what they accomplish when they get out there.
Yeah.
And, we bring a whole fun atmosphere to it, too. We take care of you. We want you to have a good experience from when you park your car to when you're hosing off at the end and sitting in, we call it Charger Village, where all the registration and gear is and food and beverages. And what's really neat is we have this feature called Abusement Park, and it is nestled right up to this Charger Village. And what Abusement Park is, it's the last stretch when you finish. And, a lot of people have that laugh when you have a race where you kind of have your arms up and wave at everybody as you hit the finish line. We're the opposite. It's called Abusement Park for a reason. We shove 7 obstacles into the last 150 yards.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Oh, no.
All right. So,
and it's our way of saying thank you for coming out.
A slap right across the face.
But no, I mean, you hit that right at the end. And what's cool is when you come to register, we have it all nestled in there together. So you're picking up your packet, you're watching somebody run through it at the end of their race, and then you go and run, and then when you finish, you're sitting there having your ice cold beverage, and somebody else is finishing, so you're watching them go through what you just did, and the camaraderie and people cheering for each other, and it's just great. It's fun to be at.
Perfect. Perfect.
On top of that, we bring a full television production crew with us because we make a TV show out of this.
And really?
We film the Charge for Glory, the competitive men's and the competitive women's heats. And those are actually turned into a television show that you can actually watch. In Tucson, you can watch it on Fox Sports Arizona. And that's on weekly there. And that just shows from all these events that we go to various towns. And we make a men's and a women's show out of each event.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. So, Brent, in the last couple seconds here, where can people sign up for this phenomenal event?
You bet. Just hardcharge.com.
All right.
Well, that's easy enough. All right. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you out there.
Yep.
We're excited, too. Thank you for hosting us in Tucson, and we're looking forward to getting into the warm weather down there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
All right.
Absolutely beautiful.
And thanks, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right. See you then, gentlemen. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right, folks, we've got to take a quick break. On the other side of the break, we'll have more fun stuff here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Anthony Cigar Emporium, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and Sleeping Frog Farms.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
That's exactly right, Fred.
We just got finished talking to Brent Wolf with the Hard Charge, which you and I have been talking about for weeks now, the obstacle course race. It's 20-plus obstacles in 4 miles. He said it's 20 to 30 obstacles. We got sucked in on 20, and now they're telling us 30.
We got sucked in.
Yeah.
You.
But that's still going to be a blast.
Oh, it's going to be good times.
Tucson Arts Brigade is having a youth artist call. If you go to TucsonArtsBrigade.org, if you're between age 20 up to 24 years old, you can what?
Nothing.
What are you laughing at?
Nothing.
All right, fine. So I'm just going to continue. So they're having a youth artist call, Colors Are Our Voices, a Generation of Creative Youth, They're seeking submissions. So if you want more information, go to TucsonArtsBrigade.org. Is it because I can't say brigade?
Pretty much, Fred.
All right, Jeffrey. So on April 5th, there's two events coming up. It'll be a lot of fun. The first is called the Body Love Conference. Change your world, not your body. You know, we had Jade Beal on, Beautiful Body Project.
Beautiful woman.
A couple months ago.
Yep.
And this is a big conference that's coming up in Tucson on April 5th. It's promoting high energy, positive and progressive feelings about where women can come together to build a community in a supportive environment and while participating in revolutionary presentations and workshops.
That is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Though you and I are not invited, I'm sure they will have a ball.
No, I'm sure that it's by gender. I don't know. I'll have to get more information on that. The same thing on April 5th is the fourth annual Beads of Courage Dance Marathon Tucson.
That's right.
With a flash mob at 3:15 p.m. And we had Gene Brook from Beads of Courage on last week talking about that and an event that just happened this last week.
That's right. And folks, don't forget, we're looking for 999 more people to wear.
No, we're about 800. We need about 800 people.
800 more people to carry a bead for a kid with a chronic illness. For more information on that, go to Beads of Courage, Google them, or go to the Fred Jeff website, and we'll get you all kinds of good information. And do something really, really cool for a kid somewhere in the world, because Beads of Courage go to children all over the place.
International.
Yeah, international.
So, Jeff, you know, we do talk about the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make Tucson just a great place to live.
And we got a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, but, you know, this is like one of our dream guests. Because when we first envisioned this show almost 4 years ago.
Yes. Over 4 years ago.
No, almost 4 years ago.
Well, you say when we envisioned the show or when we started the show?
No, well, okay, we envisioned the show like a week before we started it.
This is true.
So about 3.5 years ago, we sat down and we were going over different people or places that we thought would be really cool, you know, to talk about, talk to. And one of them was one of our parents' schoolmates at South Point, a little guy by the name of Jimmy Diego.
Crazy Diego, you mean?
No, Jimmy O'Bolger.
Jimmy O'Bolger.
Back in the day, according to mom and dad. Now he's Diego O'Bolger. The world-renowned...
international star of screen and... No, what does he do?
I don't know. You know, he's a retired bullfighter and one of the very few Anglo, non-Spaniard bullfighters to see massive success in that arena. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. And let me just extend something there. I went to school with your mom and dad from first grade on.
Saints Peter and Paul,
South Point. No.
And tell
12
us,
years.
Yeah, we keep hearing this story about you and
Wait. We have an opportunity here.
We do?
We have somebody who knows mom and dad since first grade.
Yeah, but we can't talk about that on the air.
Yeah, but we can get some stories about mom and dad.
Really? Yeah, so, Senor, tell us about our folks from 60 years ago.
Both were great.
No,
both
we won't kick you out of the show. Come on, bring it on.
No, they kicked me out of school almost. No, your folks are great. And you know, I love them both. They're just such great members of this community.
Thank you.
They've done so much for the community, and I'm really pleased to be on your show because what you're doing for the community is fantastic.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So I got to ask you a question. We were having lunch with Dad today at one of our favorite places here in town, and he's like, "So what are you guys doing for the show today?" I go, "Oh, we're having your buddy Diego O'Bolger on the show," and he starts chuckling, and he goes, "Ask him about the time when we were in Nogales, and then I'll let you finish." Because I don't know if there were multiple times y'all were in Nogales or just this one particular time when you got arrested.
No, that was the time I jumped into the ring. And one of our classmates, Dave Poor, very tall, he was like 6'5 at that time. And he carried this sword in his pant leg. And
just all the time?
No, just to get into the arena.
Would carry a sword?
And we went into the arena. We got on the sunny side of the arena. And I had my other cape that you use with the sword, And Dave walked in like he was limp in his one leg, and Dave has passed now, but his widow Shelley, his wife of all that time, was she carried it in the cape as it were a gift for like a thing that she had bought, and I put my thing a cape. This is called a muleta with the sword. I jumped in the arena. I got off one pass before I was arrested.
So. Oh wow!
And your dad was there.
Story.
Yeah,
and dad was there. Was dad cheering you on or going no?
No, I think they were cheering me.
All right. So we have to take a quick break, and then we have the rest of the show to hear some fabulous stories about what you have done and what you're going to do, what you're trying to put together in the future. So, folks, stick around for lots more here on The Friend Jeff Show.
I could have danced all night. I could have danced all night and still have begged for more. I could have spread my wings and done a thousand things. I've never done before. I'll never know what made it so exciting.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, and 1702 Craft Pizza and Beer.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth.
This is the Fred Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeff.
That's exactly right, Fred.
And we invite you to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and even subscribe to this Tome of Wisdom and Entertainment.
Why do you call it that?
On iTunes.
Okay, it's awesome. Tome of Wisdom and Entertainment.
Well, do you know what a tome is?
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you know what Wisdom and Entertainment are?
I most definitely do.
Okay, so you put those two together.
and you're looking for something else.
It's available on iTunes.
Very nice.
So, before the break, we're talking to...
Who were we talking to, Fred?
To Diego Bolger.
Yes.
I was trying to come up with something, you know, to...
I'm still trying to figure out to put Banu in a sentence.
Oh. So, Diego is from Tucson, went to school here with our parents, and he is... I think it's a little bit challenging to explain to people the significance of you making it as a bullfighter
internationally. Yeah, what you accomplished. So let's get back to the original. So you and a bunch of your classmates from South Point traveled down to Nogales. They were routinely having bullfights down in Nogales at that point. And we're talking, what year was that?
In the 50s.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of the second half of the 50s.
And so
When we were in high school, my mother worked at the newspaper. She used to take care of the promoter when he come up to place his ads in the newspaper. And he would leave at the newspaper. My mother controlled that. It was a pass for two people to get into the bullfight. So we would get I'd get the pass from my mom. There was a priest at South Point who became eventually the principal there, Father Frank McCarthy.
Yeah, we know Father Frank.
And he would get the car from South Point, and your dad and
so this was
four
a
or
South
five
Point
others.
Sponsored event?
No.
You got the priest and the car and the kids? Yeah. And you're heading on down there for mischief.
Okay.
No, they will deny that one.
Yeah, the statute of limitations has passed, so you can tell us everything.
No, but we would go down to the bullfights all the time. But let me tell you something interesting. Your family was directly... involved in my success. And I was talking to a gentleman today, and he said, well, how did you get into it? And I told him our folks knew a individual named Porky Patton, or Harold Porky Patton, who was the congressman here from this area. And Porky wasn't P-O-R-K-Y, but it's P-O-R-Q-U-E, like the word porque in Spanish, because he would always, so many people spoke Spanish before the Second World War. And as a kid growing up here, he'd walk around saying, you know, in Spanish, guys, porque, porque esto, porque el otro, you know, and they nicknamed him that.
Yeah, because you're not going to, I don't think you're going to elect anybody today with the nickname of Porky.
No, probably not. Unless you're from New Jersey.
Yeah, this is true.
So in any event, Porky Patton gave me a letter of introduction to an individual I'm sure you all know very well, Alfred Ronstadt.
Yes, we do.
Alfred Ronstadt was a lawyer, and he was at probably the top law firm in Mexico City when I first went down there. And he got me introduced to different people in bullfighting. Especially one family that I became very close to, and they really promoted. They raised fighting bulls, and they really promoted my career. But Alfred Ronstadt was directly involved in that process. So you're part of the whole process that I'm here today.
Wow, that's very nice of you to say. So why bullfighting? Why, as a young man, was that the career choice that you picked?
Well, as a kid, I used to sell newspapers. I started about 9 or 10 years of age and would sell newspapers downtown. I had what was called Hockamy's Corner and Stone in Pennington. And then I had a client that would come out every day from I think it was the Tucson Electric Company behind Hockamy's store. And he'd say, you know, you'd do me a big favor if you come in and bring my paper, you'd probably sell more. So I eventually gave up the corner, and I used to sell all the Hockamy brothers, they're the ones that worked at the store, to sell them their paper, quite a few others there, Mr. Steinfeld, the Steinfeld's department store, and others in there. And then a lot of lawyers on Church Street, they had their offices there, and I would go in and sell them their newspaper and stores downtown. I made my own little paper route downtown. And going to Hockamy's, in the display department, there were several people that worked there, especially two, and they loved bullfighting, would go to Nogales, see the fights, and I started talking to them about it because I was probably 10 years old, and my mother got that pass, and with a neighbor later, they took me with them, and in the bull ring, they had a mark at a certain height. So if you were under that mark, you could get into the bullfight free, so... The three of us went in. There was an American woman, Patricia McCormick, who was fighting with two Mexican performers, two young boys.
An American female
bullfighter? American female, Patricia McCormick.
This is in the 1950s.
In the 50s. And wow. In fact, she just died last year, in April of last year. But I was so impressed with these two guys who were just hanging on the horns almost. They were trying to not be outdone by a woman, especially an American woman. So I came back and talked to my friends there in Hockamy's display department, and they said, oh, yeah, and this and that. And I talked to other people, go to the bullfights, and read a lot about it. And one of the times going into Hockamy's to sell my papers, they said, hey, you're going to be coming around next week? Of course, I came around every week.
Sure.
And they said, a man by the name of Salvador Corona is going to be here. And he did all the murals that were in the store, and he's done quite a few others in the Mountain Oyster Club. There's some murals in there that he did in the Manning House in the Dome. There's a mural that he did, and they introduced me to him, and it turns out he had fought bulls, and he looked at me, and I was, you know, maybe 10-11 years old, and he looked at me and he says, you look like Carlos Arruza. There's actually a Carlos Arruza street downtown right near the TCC there. And he was a very famous Mexican bullfighter. And I had read his autobiography. Well, I was just enthralled when he told me that.
You read his autobiography when you were 10 years old?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to
read. So you already were.
I was very into
it. You already had the passion.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, because I was so interested in what was it all about. So... He said to me, I didn't speak Spanish at the time, and he didn't speak English, so he said, you want to come by my house, and I'll start training you. Well, his daughter was the one that would translate for us, and he started teaching me the passes, and it was kind of a big joke. Yeah, I'm sure your dad made fun of it, too. Had a good time with it. And he said, what are you doing this weekend? No, I'm going to train for bullfighting, and then we're going to off do something else, you know.
Wow.
And so I... you know, I got into it, and I finally decided that I wanted to do that. And after graduating from South Point, I went to Mexico. I rode my little motorcycle down, and
that's probably a show all in itself right there. Riding your motorbike from Tucson to Mexico City back in the 50s.
I know, but it took me several days. I mean, it took me over a week to get there.
Betcha.
But and then I was there for about a month and a half, and it was stolen. So,
well, it got you there.
So yeah. So Diego, when you say a pass, my assumption is that's when the bull runs past you.
Well, the pass I was talking about was the pass that the promoter would leave.
Right,
with
but
my
when
mother.
You say that he taught you.
I did one pass. Yes, he taught me these different passes with the big cape called the capote, and then with the smaller cape called the muleta. And he gave me kind of a basic introduction to it. And then I went, and after Alfred Ronstadt got me into contact with different people, and then especially going to that ranch, I would train in the big ring in Mexico City. And I just went there and trained with some kids and started to learn that way. Unfortunately, at that time, there was no real good school for teaching people. There are some schools now, and they're turning out some very well-prepared professional novices who will become a full matador de toros.
And is that a long process?
In my case, it took over 6 years.
It's like a journeyman kind of process.
Exactly. It's kind of like the minor leagues, and then you step up to the major leagues. And here you're a professional novice. And then you go through a process, a little ceremony called the alternativa, when they confer on you the status of a full matador de toros. And
it seems to me I'd rather face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball than a 1,000-pound bull. You know, both coming at you, you know, get a little bit more nervous when you see those
horns. It's a little different concept because, you know, instead of trying to hit the ball out of the park, you're trying to take that with your cape, make movement around you, and do so in such a way that with between the bull's charge and your body and the cape, you're creating an art form. There's nothing sporting about bullfighting.
What do you mean there's nothing sporting?
It's not a sport. It's an art form.
It's
really.
Art.
It's a spectacle, yeah. And a lot of tradition, a lot of history involved in this and how it evolved. It started out with people on horseback, and then in the early 1700s, the first of the Bourbon line of kings, the current king of Spain, Juan Carlos de Borbon, his ancestor came from France and became the Spanish king, and he, not understanding it, the bullfights, he knew he couldn't just stop it, so he influenced the nobles to refrain from participating in it. And by the late 1700s, it started to become the art form that is today.
Wow.
Now, I've seen video. I've never been to a live bullfight, but it is a dance. It is very artful,
right. and that's the more artistic it is. It's not. You don't get points. You don't get. The only timing is so it doesn't extend too far in the third stage, but there's no real time limit. If you're doing a great job in the third stage, the authority at the ring in Mexico, he's called the judge, and in Spain he's called the president, and he's the maximum authority at the bullfight. But you have a time limit, but if you're doing just fantastic with the bull, they're not going to stop you, and the people are into it and everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sadly, we have to take another break. So, folks, we got lots more interesting, real interesting history and a great friend of Tucson, more to talk about. So stick around. We'll be right back.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by H&S Estate Garden, the Flight Grill at Pima Air and Space Museum, and PETA Jungle.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronson. I'm here with my little brother Jeffrey.
Hola, Shukshon.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful. And with us...
That's right, Fred. You're stepping on my that's right, Fred.
No, I we didn't have time. I thought we decided during the break.
Now we're wasting more time.
Well, you just wasted it.
Are we going to get into the brother fight right now?
No. We're going to get into the bullfight.
Dun, so, dun,
so we have Diego Obolger here in studio with us, a guy who grew up in the mean streets of downtown Tucson.
Selling paper to the mob.
Well, yeah. The Hockmies and the Seinfelds.
Yeah, the Mexican mob. There you go. Right. Yeah.
So, and before the break, we were talking about the art of the bullfight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember when I was at South Point, we had one of our teachers was very passionate about bullfighting, and we had these great lectures about actually it was Doherty, Coach Doherty.
He was a very good friend of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know the music, there are all these different elements that go into a bullfight, and each tune means something. The parade of the different individuals means something. Mm-hmm. There's all significance.
So what's your point, Fred?
Well, we have an expert in the studio, and instead of me gumming about it.
Yes.
We have him talk about...
Great idea. So, Diego.
Talking about the dance and the beauty of this thing.
Yeah, let's talk about the art of the bullfight.
Well, you know, there's no way... bullfighting, the term, is really a misnomer. For a very simple reason that there's no way you can physically fight with that bull. They'll knock a car. They'll pick a car up and turn it over. They're that strong. And what you have to do is use your intelligence, use your courage, and your knowledge of how that animal is charging, because each one charges differently. Each one favors one horn over the other. They may have a problem with one of their eyes. They don't see too well. So all these things are going on while you're working the animal. He doesn't just charge at the cape. You have to make him charge at the cape. But as you do that, and as you control that charge with either the big cape, the capote, or the small one, the muleta, which is draped over, mounted on a stick and draped over the sword, you go through that whole process, but you're trying to create this plastic beauty, this sense of something. You know, each pass lasts maybe a second to a second and a half. So in that, with your body, you have to blend that whole brute force that you're controlling, your timing, you're slowing its charge down by the way you're moving the cape in front of it, and you're creating this art form, and then you're finishing it off with, because bulls will charge 5, 6, 7 times. They'll get tired, you do a finishing pass, and then you walk away from the animal. And you allow the people to applaud. You, at the same time, you're giving the bull a chance to breathe and get his wind back, and then he'll charge again. But you're creating this art form. It's so intangible. It's not like, oh, you did 100 passes. You can do 100 passes and mean nothing. And you can do 15 or 20 and just bring the house down, because they're so artistic. There's so such a flow. It's like a dance in a sense, but you've got this uncontrollable force that you don't know which way he's going, but you've got to control him as he goes by you.
Wow, that's crazy. If folks want to find out more about that type of art, is there a great website that people can go to kind of to understand more about that, the art of the bullfighting?
There may be. I don't know if there is in
or
English.
A book?
There's a lot of books. Now, I don't know if the library has any of them. There's quite a few. A fellow who is the fourth American, I'm the sixth American to have taken the alternativa, become a full matador de toros. The man who was the fourth, he was my business partner, John Fulton. He wrote a book just called Bullfighting, and very explains everything, the history, the origins. And interesting enough, he used all photos of himself in the fighting in the ring.
No one's ever claimed that bullfighters don't have small egos, right? That's why he used all his pictures.
No, I think it was a unique thing to do, because a lot of people who wrote books on bullfighting weren't actual performers, and they just took photos of different people. So it was kind of a unique thing for him to do that.
Very cool.
He was the nicest person in the world. You couldn't find a better person than him.
So then let's talk, because of the art form,
yeah,
there's also maybe misconceptions about bullfight or the cruelty of the bullfight. How do you guys wrap your arms around that and find beauty in it?
Well, the origins of the bullfight come from hunter-gatherers. they would go out and hunt these animals, which are extremely difficult for them to control or to kill, because their eyes are at the side of their head. They are an offensive animal. If you get into their territory, they are going to charge. And what you're doing in a bullfight is taking advantage of it. Is it cruel? If you use the dictionary's definition of cruelty, it's anything that inflicts pain on a living entity. It could be a person. Really, to understand cruelty, you have to have a conscious awareness of what cruelty is. Bulls don't have that conscious awareness. Interesting enough, though, all the fighting bull stock, they're called Bos Taurus Ibericus. That's their Latin classification. The hypothalamus in the back of the brain, their hypothalamus on average is 20% bigger than other cattle.
Wow.
So when they get into a situation where they become aggressive, the hypothalamus starts producing beta endorphins, and it just makes them more aggressive. They don't really feel the pain, and I'm not saying they're immune to the pain, but they just become more aggressive. They keep fighting all the way, they'll keep charging all the way through the full bullfight.
Wow.
When you put the sword in at the end, you do it because that's what the whole process is of this living. This is life, and this is death. And one of the things that happens here in the States, there's three types of animals. You have your companion animals, dogs, cats, birds, fish, maybe a horse. Then you have domesticated animals such as horses and goats and sheep, camels. And then you have your wild animals. And they are, you know, wild animals, you don't just go up and...
A bobcat.
Or right. See a bear at Yellowstone and want to go up and scratch it behind the ear, because it's just not going to work.
It will scratch you in a special way.
Yeah. But fighting bulls kind of come between the domesticated and the wild. You can't walk up to them and just, you know, scratch them on the back or whatever, because it's not going to work. You're going to get killed because you're in their space. Now, in a sense, they're domesticating the fact that you're feeding them every day. So I had a person say to me the other day, but it's so inhumane. And of course it is, because bulls are not humans. They are animals. And as much as people like to think that their dogs and cats are part of their family and everything, your animal has never, ever told you a joke.
Right.
There's no way.
They've left us plenty on the carpet.
Exactly. That joke's on you, but
right.
They haven't told you that joke. In any event, they're animals. You can't put human thoughts into animals. It just doesn't work. They're reactionary. And animals react. They don't think things through.
So at the end of a bullfight, you get ears, tails, how does that work?
If you do well, you get one ear. If you do better, two ears and a tail. If you do fantastic.
And how many two ears and a tail have you ever gotten?
Oh gosh, I don't know how many. Maybe 10 ears.
Wow.
Out of 300 animals or so.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're also trying to bring a charro experience here to Tucson.
Right. I've been working with, I'm kind of basically a volunteer, you could say, at this stage, with the Rio Nuevo board, and to bring a charro arena to the land, just that area, just to the east and at the base of a mountain. And a lienzo charro is where the charros have their rodeos. And it'll be a multi-purpose facility. It will have, for the charriadas, it will have that wall of the lienzos will be able to be moved to be for regular rodeos. And at the top of that seating area, there'll be a gourmet Mexican restaurant that we're looking at. Plus, on the outside, we'll have, for banquets, we'll have a banquet hall for 2,000 seated guests. There'll be commercial properties along that, too. So it'll be a focal point, and the idea is to promote, and I like what how you start your program and you talk about it all the time, that there are basically four different cultures. You're indigenous, especially at Dawn of them. Then you have the Spanish culture, who took the first name for this area, Chuxon, and turned it into Tucson. If you go to Mexico, they still call it Tucson. And then you have the Mexican culture and then the American culture. And it's be a living display of all those cultures for individuals or for groups of people, too.
Oh, that sounds like a ball. That sounds great. Well, I hope you guys get it done. Yeah, I hope it, mm-hmm. I hope it happens. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it would be something that would be a great asset to the community.
I think it will. I think it'll be a unique where you have everything together in one place and as far as the cultures.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I mean,
Thank you. We
wanted to have you on forever, and you haven't disappointed us, and we're really pleased that you could be
here.
Hope to have you back soon, too.
Oh, I would love to.
Great.
Sweet. So we have a little housekeeping. Time to give away a dozen roses from our friends, the Coleman family and Meafield Florist.
And let's throw in a $25 gift certificate to our little happy restaurant, Pita Jungle.
We can do that.
All right. Either Pita Jungle on North Oracle or Broadway and Craycroft.
So the first person to email me at Fred at fredandjeff.com. Fred at fredandjeff.com and tells us, let's see, tell us the favorite restaurant.
Yeah, that's a good favorite restaurant, or use Banu in a sentence.
Use Banu in a sentence. Use Banu in a sentence.
You get that. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you some more with some great folks in our community next week here on the Fred and Jeff Show.